today, we've had a national tragedy. Two airplanes have crashed into the World Trade Center in an apparent terrorist attack on our country.
We want to tell you what we know as we know it, but we just got a report in that there's been some sort of explosion.
For any second floor, and I don't know where my peers are. I don't know. I hope to God they're okay. We saw a shadow. It looked like a plane. Next thing we know, it was boom, and the floor started shaking.
Oh, my God.
Oh, my God.
That looks like a second plane.
I was happened to look on the first tower, and I actually saw people waving where the first plane crashed through, and then it was unbelievable seeing this second jet come crashing into the second tower. What is going on?
Heaven on earth, we need it now.
I was buried alive in 15 minutes until I scrambled out.
Sick of all of this.
Oh my God, there it goes!
Sick of sorrow.
Oh my God. The second building has just come down.
Sick of the pain.
And the death toll, still uncountable.
Sick of hearing.
Is also unimaginable.
Again and again. That there's gonna be.
A new part of the Pentagon that was one of the areas that was terribly hit.
Peace on earth.
There was billowing smoke. It was hard to see everything, but I clearly saw something worse than what Dante would have imagined. There was rubble, there was twisted metal.
And then we saw the people jumping. We saw what we thought was debris, and we realized it was people jumping.
And I clearly saw bodies and what appeared to be body parts strewn on the street, on the rubble itself.
I looked up as soon as we got across the street. I looked up, I saw the building start, the tower start to buckle. Three or four of us huddled together, and it was just black everywhere.
Where I grew up.
Okay, there's been an explosion of some kind.
Where the walls, we tear them down and use them on our enemies.
We don't see the smoke yet. Everybody's saying get back. We're running, hurry!
They say that what you.
The search is underway for those who are behind these evil acts.
Surely overtake you. Then you become a monster. So the monster will not break you.
We talked to a couple of people who actually witnessed the plane going down and said it was quite devastating. Went right down into the woods. They saw all sorts of debris flying out into the woods and into the trees. And it's quite a devastating scene from what we're told.
U.S. officials are saying there was no warning, no indicators of any kind of a likely terrorist attack.
And it's already gone too far. You said that if you go in high, you won't get hurt.
The victims were in airplanes. We're in their offices.
Jesus, can you take the time to throw a drowning man a line? Peace on earth.
Moms and dads, friends and neighbors.
Tell the ones who hear no sound, whose sons are living in the ground. Peace on earth.
Thousands of lives were suddenly ended by evil.
No, who's the wise? No one cries like a mother cries for peace on earth.
Terrorist attacks can shake the foundations of our biggest buildings.
She's never got to say goodbye. The color in his eyes, now he's in the dirt.
But they cannot touch the foundation of America.
Peace on earth.
Today, America has experienced one of the greatest tragedies ever witnessed on our soil.
Out at Nellis Air Force Base, right now they're at the highest alert possible.
They're reading names out over the radio.
America was targeted for attack because we're the brightest beacon for freedom.
All the folks, the rest of us. Get to know.
And no one will keep that light from shining.
Sean and Julia.
There is a sense of war here at the Pentagon.
Gareth, Anne, and Breeder.
Completely shocking.
Their lives are bigger than any big idea. Jesus, can you take the time to throw a drowning man a line? Peace on earth.
This is the most tragic hour.
To tell the ones who hear no sound, whose sons are living in the ground, peace on earth.
In America's history. America's history.
Jesus, in the song you wrote, the words are sticking in my throat. Peace on earth.
Can't even look at it, because all I can see are people.
Hear it every Christmas time, with hope and history won't rhyme. So what's it worth? This.
I thank the many world leaders who have called to offer their condolences.
Peace on earth.
Even though I walk through the valley of the shadow of death,
peace on earth.
I fear no evil, for you are with me.
Peace on earth.
We said our thoughts and prayers are with those families and those injured and those who are the casualties of today's attack. We also remember those thousands of people who are rescue workers. We'd ask now that we all bow our heads in a moment of silence and remembrance. Thank you.
From the mountains to the prairies to the oceans, wide and wide, God bless America, my home sweet home. God bless America, my home sweet home.
Good night. God bless America.
Thanks for returning to Great Speeches and Interviews on Axis Sacramento and The Voice. I'm Steve Lerman. Today's program is Confronting Climate Change. The urgency of the climate crisis has compelled writers such as Bill McKibben and Antonia Pujas to cross the line into advocacy. Bill McKibben says that 75% of Americans know that climate change is real and want something done about it.
And I think that's the key on where I was going with the story of the oil industry doesn't want us to look at it. The next piece of that is it doesn't want us to feel like we can take action to regulate it. So one of the best things we can do that's a quick fix is to impose regulations on the industry that dramatically limit the places where it's permissible to it to go. And I would start on that list of places where it actually knows how to do its work might be a good place to start. But, we can actually put, by acting collectively, limitations on the operations of this industry, which will buy us a lot of time. And as I said, again, it's about collective movement of people. Collective movement of people means public transportation.
But restricting supply will raise prices. Is that the intended goal?
Well, there's two pieces of that. First of all, our oil markets domestically and internationally are completely out of whack. So what very most often happens is when we restrict oil supply, the price of gasoline tends to... Supply has increased of oil, demand has decreased, and price has gone up. Our markets are very out of whack, and one of the primary reasons is the control it's exercised over the markets of the industry. What I would want to see is the price. We could restrict supply, restrict demand, and again, capture high prices of oil and gas into the ways that we need to transition away off.
That's right. Now economists and other, Bernie Sanders and Barbara Boxer introduced a bill this year in Congress. And I mean, it's very, it says, look, we're going to raise the price of oil, and we're going to do it artificially, and then we're going to take most of the money we collect and we're going to send it back to people so that they don't get bankrupted in the process. The basic question that you want to answer is, who owns the sky? If it's Exxon, then we should keep doing what we're doing now. If it's all the rest of us, then at the very least they should be paying rent, to us for the damage they're doing. And if they did, I mean, if you went to the, every time you filled up your tank, gasoline was, $7 a gallon like it is in Europe, you would start saying to yourself, actually, I don't require a semi-military vehicle to get my groceries, And at the same time, you'd be getting a check in the mail that would put you ahead of where you are and would actually give you the capital to go off and do things like put solar panels on your house that would free you from having to be forever dependent on... one of the reasons, let's be clear about it, that we don't have solar panels and things like that in the abundance we should is that Exxon could put them up. They could be good at it, doubtless. But the business flaw, the flaw in the business plan for them is you can't actually meter the sun, So they hate it, They like things where they can control supply.
Also, I think the other thing that would happen if gasoline was $7 a barrel, a gallon, is that more people would more aggressively demand that they had some other way to get around.
Why do you think it's right? I mean, it's not, Europe doesn't have a good train system because Europe has better train engineers or something than we have. They have it because they kept the price of energy high since the end of the war. And so people, you got elected politician, you got elected whatever you're doing by making sure that there were good trains that came on time.
Let's have our next question for Bill McKibben and Antonia Juhas.
Okay. I have Fidelity Managed Funds, and I've asked my fund manager
to have the representatives go to the annual stockholders meetings of the oil companies and all to push for renewable energy, and if they don't, to divest from that. But my question is, back in the 70s, there was New Times Magazine had an article about the oil companies buying up all the solar patents and other patents since the 1930s. What has happened with that? Why isn't anybody talking about what they've done all these years?
Well, they could well have done that. I mean, but the good news is that this technology, this genie is out of the bottle. We know how to do it all over the place. The Germans are demonstrating that. The Chinese are demonstrating that every day. I'll tell you a funny story. I was in China doing a big piece for National Geographic on China and energy. And I spent the day with the guy who runs the biggest solar hot water company in the world. 25% of Chinese homes get their domestic hot water from solar panels on the roof, compared with less than 1% in the United States. And most of that 1% goes for swimming pools. At the end of the day, he showed me his private museum. And the pride of place in his private museum was an old rusting solar hot water panel. I said, you know what that is? No. What? That's one of the ones that Jimmy Carter put on the White House in 1979. Wow. And Ronald Reagan took down in 1985 because he wanted, you know, manlier forms of energy than this stuff. And we knew how to do this stuff a long time ago. We've not done it because it's been in the interest of particular people that we not do it. And we know how to do it. The engineering gets better with each passing year. We're doing some of it around the edges, but the economic headwind imposed by the fact that there's no price on carbon guarantees we will never do it fast enough to make a difference in climate change unless we change that factor.
You can listen to great speeches and interviews on accesssacramento.org, or you can go to greatspeechesandinterviews.blogspot.com.
Sometimes I feel like a motherless child. Sometimes I feel like a motherless child. Sometimes like a motherless child, a long way from home, a long a long
Let's try to get as many questions as we can. Yeah. Sorry about that. We got 7 minutes left. We have a line. We'll get through as many as we can with quick questions and quick answers. Welcome to Climate One.
Hi. We are maybe facing our own tar sands in America here in California with the oil industry wanting to frack the Monterey Shale. Most Californians know nothing about this, and if they do know about it, they think it's natural gas, so it's a good thing. Meanwhile, our legislature, our mostly Democratic legislature and our governor, is looking at this oil as a source of jobs and of tax revenues. And so are our progressive allies, who are looking at things like an oil severance tax might really bring in a lot of money for higher education. So this is pretty much a serious situation. You got any suggestions for California anti-fracking activists?
Antonio, you have?
Yeah, I mean, there's you raise very, very good points, and there's actually a number of really amazing groups that have started to focus on California's fracking. Folks, help me with some of the groups that are doing work on fracking, because I know there's a lot. Greenpeace, Sierra Club. I know there's been a lot of activity.
Don't give up. I think the legislature just passed a serious progress towards a moratorium on fracking in California, even within the last week or two. Don't give up. I bring you good tidings from my home state of Vermont, the only state in the union that's banned fracking at this point. So it's not impossible.
Think also it's really important in those discussions to talk about natural gas burns cleaner, but the process for getting it is the same for getting oil, and in some cases can be even worse. The other just piece I wanted to add on really quickly, because it's really important for the discussion of divestment, is the idea of wanting to push oil companies more into alternative energy. That's not the path, I think, is the wise path. I think we've seen the way that the industry uses the resource that it already works with, and I'm not particularly interested in handing the sun over to them or handing wind or water over to them. And I think that really the idea is localized production of alternative energy and localized uses is much preferable than moving to have the majors move into alternative energy themselves, and rather have them really do everything they can and use all their money to produce oil the best way that they can, the cleanest and safest and healthiest. As long as we're dependent on this resource, they should be putting all of their money into doing it as absolutely fine as and well and fantastic as they can. And I'd love to see them, you know, use their money towards that good rather than moving into other places.
Let's have our next question. Welcome.
In the context of the public making sustainable choices within our petrohegemony, would you both comment on plastic use, on our addiction to plastic in convenience culture? Plastic bottles, etc.
Plastics. Antonio, you have?
Yeah, absolutely. This is a petroleum product. There's a lot of problematic petroleum products and not just oil. I think there has been, you know, really good movements towards trying to shift away from, for example, using plastic bottles to reusable bottles. But we have to look at the whole cycle of life in plastics in the same way that we look at the whole cycle of, or trying to look more at the whole cycle of life of oil. Because in the same way that we have very problematic refineries, production of oil, disposal of oil, the petrochemical industry is, you know, just as, if not even more destructive in its production processes, creating plastics and other byproducts that it makes, and much less attention is paid to that. And I think the more that we looked at that, the more that more people would be willing to give up, the so-called convenience of using our plastics, and maybe part of expanding the story is a part of a way of addressing that.
Let's have our next question for Antonio Yuhas and Bill McKibben. Welcome.
Hi, my name is Carter Brooks, climateart.com. We've been talking about structural problems. One of the structural problems that civilization has is that there's too much energy. We have a supply problem, if you will. It took the Earth half a billion years to store up all this energy. So as we talk about the fossil fuel industry as being the problem, they're sort of the middleman in this. In a way, the way we're all in it together is that we have this too much energy problem, as if it's an open bank vault. So my concern is that, you know, the demonization of the oil industry as the problem, just notwithstanding all the, you know, abuses, means that we don't recognize this other problem that we have, which is that it's there. They're bringing it to us and we have to shut it down. But if we just say they're the problem and then we fix that, then we still are left with the problem that we have. So I wonder if you could both comment on that a little bit.
Antonio, you have?
Oil isn't an inherently problematic resource. It exists in the planet naturally. It exists in our ecosystem naturally. In the Gulf of Mexico, there are natural seeps that go into the Gulf every single year. There are ecosystems that have developed to withstand the natural seeps and to live in harmony for many, many, many years, oil was dealt with as a localized, limited-use resource that was used to fix boats by Native Americans in the United States. And you know, people lived in harmony with this resource, which is a naturally occurring resource. What shifted was turning it into something of mass production, mass consumption, and mass profit. It's not an inherently problematic resource. We can live in coexistence with it. What we can't live in coexistence with is the way it's being explored for, produced, refined, consumed, and disposed of. And that is something that we absolutely do can have a handle over.
I mean,
Bill McKibben, last word.
The real answer to your question, I mean, yeah, there's a lot of oil on the planet and a lot of energy we could get at. But, you know, it's minuscule compared to the amount of energy that washes over the planet every hour of every day from the sun and the wind. Think of the insane waste of just letting that all wash past us. And instead, we're like, you know, down 7,000 feet below the Gulf of Mexico, you know, trying to, like, drill holes through things, or up in the tar. People are going to look back in 100 years and just, like, scratch their heads. You know, it's like, really? That's what, you know, we're of a cult of, like, black rocks that we, you know, go find or something. Dick, and so there is an literally unlimited amount of energy that comes from above, and as we get good at using it, you know, it'll replace that. The question is, and it's the only question, can we get good at using it fast enough? Because we've got a very limited window of a very short time to avoid absolute all-out, too late to stop global warming, but maybe not too late to stop all-out climate catastrophe. That's what the issue is right now. And that's why this is so urgent. That's why people are going to jail in large numbers. That's why kids at the Rhode Island School of Design the day before yesterday occupied the president's office and demanded divestment of their fossil fuel stock. That's why, you know, people around the world are starting to stand up. They understand that our moment, uniquely in human history, what we do over the next few years will determine what tens of thousands of years to come will be like. That's why it's a fight.
We have to end it there. Our thanks today to Bill McKibben, founder of 350.org and author of Earth, Making of a Life on a Tough New Planet, and Antonia Juhas, author of Black Tide and a fellow at the Investigative Reporting Program at the UC Berkeley Graduate School of Journalism. You've been listening to Climate One. I'm Greg Dalton. Thank you all for coming. Thank you.
down to a precious few. September, November, and these few precious days spent with you. These precious days I'll spend with you. These precious days I'll spend with you.
That's all, folks.